When Moist, Harry and associates reboarded the coaches in the small hours and started on the long journey home, this time the crates of beer were brought out for the victors. "Well done, lads," Harry boomed as he cracked the top off a bottle. "You did all I expected and more, gentlemen. And you know Harry King is a generous man, and so I look forward to working with you again soon. You can rely on it." He lay back on the seat and started smoking one of his cigars, every so often chatting to one or other of his chums about the escapades they had had long ago when the watch was a laughingstock. A doorbell eventually woke Moist with a cup of tea around about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. As he supped the tea, his wife puffed up his pillows and said, "Come along then, tell me, how did it go? I wasn't woken by any big bangs last night, which I consider a result, don't you?" "Well, it wasn't a massacre, and it wasn't a lot of smacked bottoms, as far as I could tell. But the good guys won, well, to a given value of good guy. Harry's cronies are very sprightly for old guys, and devious as well." Placing a tray of food on his knees, she said, "I suppose breakfast in bed just can't present the same frisson for Mr. A life without danger is a life not worth living, yes?" Puncturing a sausage, Moist said, "How well you know me, Spike. Now listen. It seems there are a lot of goblins in the Maquis, and the people of Quirm haven't found out yet how useful they can be, even though they apparently do a good line in wine made from snails." Moist grimaced and continued, "Do you mind if I take Of the Twilight the Darkness to Quirm with me?" His wife looked astonished. "I didn't think you liked him." "Well, he grows on you, you know, like a fungus. And there's going to be a lot of puzzled goblins around now, so they might like to see a friendly face." He hesitated. "If you can call it that." In darkness, far from Moist, in just about every sense that could be imagined, including the metaphysical, deliberations were taking place in a cavern that was paradoxically glittering and dark when tested by a different eye. It was illuminated, in so far as there was illumination, by one solitary candle, whose light was, as the saying goes, just there to show you the darkness. Nevertheless, its trembling little light was refracted in a veritable hoard of gems, the like of which, if you added up the sad little glimmerings, gave off entirely less light than could be delivered by a humble tallow candle. It was, in short, a light that hid from light, and it had a reason to hide. Just as the unfortunate dwarf, now sitting uncomfortably in the centre of the cavern, had reason to wish to be elsewhere. Elsewhere, he thought, was the operative word. Anywhere would surely be a better place than here. On the other hand, he was under a religious obligation. He had first heard it on his father's knee, or possibly his mother's, because he had never seen or heard either of them clearly, and their voices were always muffled, because silence was as much of a virtue as darkness among the Grags. And as he recalled the undeniable fact, he almost tried to cut and run, stopping himself in a nanosecond because there was nowhere to hide. He was in it too high. For humans, he would have been in too deep, way too deep. Never a good place to be for a dwarf, and the Grags had the measure of him. It was said that they had many ways of killing in the darkness, and even had ways of moving from darkness to darkness without being apprehended by the intervening light. Oh, so much was said of them, although generally it was whispered. And he had done so many bad things, like eating beef and buying his wife colourful earrings. And, worst of all, he had become friends with Rocky Debris, who was, horror of horrors, a troll, and also quite a decent bloke, who he quite often sat next to when they were going to work, and who, like him, was a supporter of Dolly Sisters United, and generally went with him when there was a match on, and surely anyone who cheered for your side was a friend, wasn't he? And yes, he was, but down in the base of his brain was the bogeyman of his childhood, and subtle whisperings, curdled fragments of old songs sung on special occasions, little observances made wholly by repetition with the right people sitting at the same fireside, in those cosy days when you were not really old enough to understand and didn't have your wretched brain stuffed full of ideas that part of you thought you shouldn't ever obey, like not shaking hands with a troll, and now he had been seen, and now they had him, and now they stood between him and his chances of a new life after death. They held the keys to the next world, and on a whim, could have him floating in the ultimate darkness of the Gnunga Gap, where there were things, tormentors, creatures of indefinite invention and patience. He shifted because of the cramp in his legs and said, "Please, I know I've got into bad ways and I've strayed from the path, and indeed may be unworthy to call myself a dwarf, but if you allow me, I can make recompense. Please, I'm begging you, remove my shackles and I promise to do whatever you ask." The silence in the room grew thicker, more dense, as if it was pulling itself together. How long had he been in here now? It might as well have been years or merely seconds. That was the difficulty about darkness. It encompassed everything, turning it into an amorphous substance in which everything got twisted and remembered and then lost. "Very well," said the voice. "We have looked into your wretched soul and are minded to give you one last chance. Be aware there will be no other." The voice softened a little and said, "Tak is watching you. Now you can eat your meal, which is right in front of you, and go from this place and be assured that Tak will be with you. Remember, for those who turn away there is no redemption, and when Tak needs you, you will be contacted again." After a rare, well-earned evening with his wife, Moist set off the next day on the golem horse with Of the Twilight the Darkness clinging on behind him. As they galloped along, there was something about the golem horse that was troubling Moist von Lipwig. A golem horse was incredibly useful if you needed to get somewhere fast, that is, if you liked to ride where you spent a lot of the time finding that stirrups just didn't do the job. You merely hung on until you got there. It was as simple as that. No need to steer, Nag-Nav did the trick. If you told it where you wanted to go, it took you there. The creature made no sound, required no water or oats, and simply stood patiently when it wasn't in use. And then it dawned on Moist what the problem was. It was all give and no take. Generally speaking, he didn't have much to do with the concept of karma, but he had heard of it and felt that a ton of it was dropping on him right now. The horse was all give and he was all take. But that was nuts, he told himself. A spoon doesn't want you to say please and thank you, does it? Ah, yes, he thought, but a spoon is a piece of metal, and the golem horse is a horse. He hesitated, pondering, and thought, I wonder. Shortly before the border crossing, they reached the head of the finished railway track. He and the goblin thankfully slid off the horse, and a sudden impulse prompted Moist to ask the creature a question. "Can you speak?" he asked, feeling more than faintly ridiculous. And the answer came back out of the air rather than from the horse's mouth, as it were.
"Yes, if we want to."
The goblin sniggered. Moist ignored him and pressed on with his line of inquiry. "Ah, we're getting somewhere. Would you like to run around in meadows and generally cavort in pastures and so on?" Out of nowhere came,
"Yes, if you wish."
Moist said, "But what do you wish?"
I don't understand the concept.
Moist breathed in and said, I saw a little stream not far back and some green pastures, and for the sake of my soul, I would like you to go over there and gallop in the meadows and enjoy yourself.
Yes, enjoy myself if you want me to.
For heaven's sake, this is manumission we're talking about here.
That would be horsemission, sir, and I must point out that I don't need to enjoy myself.
Well, do so for my sake, will you please? Roll around on the flowers and neigh a bit and gallop about and have some kind of fun. If not for your own pleasure, then for my sanity, please. He watched the horse disappear into the meadow. Behind him, Of the Twilight the Darkness cackled.
What a piece of work you are, Mr. Slightly Damp, freeing the slaves and all. What do you think his lordship will say about that?
Moist shrugged. He might be acerbic, but a little acerbic isn't all that bad. He's quite a one for freedom, is Vetinari, though not necessarily mine. Turning his attention to the railway, Moist was pleased to see that the work gangs, under the tutelage of Mr. Simnel's young men, were evidently making steady progress, laying down the next stage of track towards Quirm. To travel onwards, Moist and Of the Twilight the Darkness hitched a ride on a handcar operated with gusto by two young railway workers, a curiously amusing contraption whose wheels ran along the newly laid rails, still waiting to be fully bedded in. They passed the border with only a brief stop to deal with the formalities, which were, in fact, nothing more than nodding at the guards and saying, "Is it okay if we cross, lads?" whereupon they briefly stopped digging their respective allotments and waved them through. Where the handcar ran out of track, they found an old man with a horse and cart waiting, as arranged, to take them the rest of the distance to the chateau. He was clearly very sniffy about having a goblin and his nice clean vehicle, even though it was only a cart. The Marquis was waiting for them at the chateau and beamed at Moist, his nose wrinkled at the sight of Moist's companion. "Who is this?" he asked, in a tone a society lady might take upon finding half of something bristling in her soup. "This is Of the Twilight the Darkness." Of the Twilight the Darkness gave the Marquis a smart salute.
"Of the Twilight the Darkness, Mr. Marquis. Nice place you got here, very nice. Don't worry about smell, I'll get used to it."
After an awkward silence, the Marquis said, "Mon Dieu."
"Not a god, Mr. Marquis," said Of the Twilight the Darkness. "Just goblin. Best there is. Oh, yes, very useful, you know,"
the goblin continued in ringing sarcasm.
"And not only that, Mr. Marquis, I'm real. If you cut me, do I not bleed? And if you do, I bleeding well cuts you too, no offence meant."
The Marquis's laughter bounced off the scenery. There was no doubt about it. The goblin knew how to break the ice, even an iceberg. The Marquis held out a hand and said, "Enchanté, Monsieur of the Twilight the Darkness. Do you drink wine?" The goblin hesitated.
"Are there snails in it?"
As they climbed the wide stone steps up the terrace, the Marquis said, "Regrettably, we don't include snail. I know your people like snail wine, but I'm afraid I have none to offer you."
"Never mind, squire. We'll have it as it comes, please. And for record, Mr. Marquis, they ain't my people, they're your people. I'm an Ankh-Morpork lad. Have seen the big horse and all that stuff."
An Ankh-Morpork citizen will never yield to the idea that there are other cities at least as good as their own, and treat the concept that there could be with humorous disdain. The phrase originated when an Ankh-Morpork citizen was shown an equestrian statue in Pseudopolis, and when faced with the beast said, "Maybe it's a big horse, I'm Morporkian," an incident that gave rise to a popular barroom song. The view in the late afternoon sun over the Maquis from the terrace was wonderful.
"You have many goblins in Ankh-Morpork, Mr. Liebwig?" the Marquis asked as he poured Moist a glass of chilled wine. "I've heard, of course, of Milord Vetinari's famous melting pot. And yet I am informed that many people in Ankh-Morpork still feel very unsure about them and think that getting involved with goblins shows that the owner is dirty. So much for the prejudices of your countrymen, who are, as one as to say, a fairly dirty lot in any case. Whereas, here in Quirm, notre logique points out that we are cleaner. After all, Quirm is the home of Monsieur Bidet, yet another apparatus for keeping clean, and yet you in Ankh-Morpork sneer at us for being dirty."
"Yes, I know, it's deplorable," said Moist. "I did meet Monsieur Bidet, though regrettably I didn't shake him by the hand. Excuse me, is something wrong?" The Marquis suddenly looked preoccupied.
"Someone was watching us from the tree over there. I must have spoken too loudly, because whoever it is has made haste to get down to the cover of the ground. He's small but larger than a goblin. You hardly ever see them in the trees."
There was a movement in the air as Of the Twilight the Darkness vaulted over the parapet and disappeared into the landscape below. He reappeared almost as quickly, saying,
"Dwarf bugger! Have it away on toes! I spit me of him!"
The Marquis topped up Moist's glass and said,
"A dwarf? Something to do with you, Mr. Liebwig? Industrial espionage? One would expect the dwarfs to be keen on something like a railway. They are, after all, metal workers and traders in ore."
"I don't think so," said Moist. "The Clacks saw a bit of trouble a few months ago with extremist factions knocking down some of their towers, but that seems to have died down now, and there don't seem to be many dwarfs interested in working on the railway. Something to do with the Grags, I expect. The Grags don't seem to like anybody of importance in Ankh-Morpork."
"Oh, yes,"
said the Marquis. "The famous Coombe Valley Accord and all that business. I believed it to be sorted out. So did everybody else. You must know how it is. Can't please absolutely everybody, and you certainly can't please the Greggs, however hard you try." Fully refreshed, moist, and of the twilight the darkness, set off into the Maquis to find the goblin denizens, who, even if they did not, strictly speaking, own the land through which the railway would go, needed to be informed and consulted. As squatters on unclaimed land, Moist thought, they surely must have some claim to it. As they made their way into the scrubby and thorny landscape, Moist pondered the significance of the dwarf who had been spying on him, right here in Quirm, where you didn't normally see dwarfs. This meant he had been followed, and that almost surely meant more than one person. During his misspent youth, and, not to put too fine a point on it, his largely misspent early middle age, he'd reckoned to be conversant with the methodology of spying, and one person alone couldn't ensure reasonable tracking of the target. What was the dwarf doing there? Where had he come from? And, more important, where did he go? His reverie was interrupted when Of the Twilight the Darkness stopped suddenly by a rocky outcrop, which, as far as Moist could tell, was indistinguishable from several other similar outcrops they had passed already. It was hot, very hot.
"Wait here," said the goblin. "We'll be back in a shake."
In fact, it was another sweaty hour, and the sun was beginning to dip below the horizon before the goblin came back along the track, trailed by a large crowd of Quirmian goblins, their numbers swelling all the time as even more of them emerged from the undergrowth. When it came to looks, the Quirm goblins seemed exactly the same as the ones over the border in Ankh-Morpork. However, unlike the Ankh-Morpork goblins, the Quirmian goblins were dressed in a way that could only be called snazzy. They had a certain panache, unavailable to their Ankh-Morpork brethren, and a whiff about them of what was probably odour snail, which, instead of masking the ubiquitous goblin smell, merely lent it an extra piquancy. Admittedly, the materials on show were effectively the same, bits of animal skin, or indeed the animals themselves, birds, feathers, all embellished with sparkling stones. It was as if goblins had discovered taxidermy, but hadn't quite got the important, nay, essential point of scooping out the messy bits first. But trust Quirm goblins to make their own haute couture. Moist smiled. He could see that somehow the goblin lads here in Quirm were trying to do it better, possibly because they had a better class of shaky swagger and a certain cheerful up-yours look in their eyes. Nevertheless, they looked like a people who had been hammered hard on the anvil of fate and had been laminated with the natural bravado which did not entirely hide their wounds. Moist was glad he had Of the Twilight the Darkness on his side, because the goblins of this part of the Maquis clearly had no liking for humanity. Of the Twilight the Darkness now sidled up to him in his bandy-legged and sneery little way and said, "These people hurting, oh so bad it is. People gone, little ones gone, pots gone, gone. Put big faces on it, yes. Can no more be truly goblin. Hurt, hurt, hurt. Now I give speech." Of the Twilight the Darkness turned out to be the goblin equivalent of Moist himself. Moist wasn't fluent in goblin, but you didn't need to know what was being said as you watched the faces and the way Of the Twilight the Darkness waved his hands. He was, in fact, doing a number. Moist couldn't make out the words, but assumed it was something like, "New life in Ankh-Morpork with all the rats you want and wages." For there they were, ideas and promises curving through the air. And so certain was Moist that he had picked up what was going on that he leaned down and said, "Don't forget to say that in Ankh-Morpork, goblins are now citizens with rights." Moist was extremely pleased to see the goblin pause and look at him.
"How you know I was talking of Ankh-Morpork, Mr. Lipbig?"
"Takes one to know one." While Of the Twilight the Darkness delivered his speech, the goblins stared at Moist. As stares went, their eyes were not baleful or angry. They were just hopeful, in the grudging way of people who had had to learn pessimism as a survival tactic. One of the goblins then stepped forward and beckoned, clearly wanting to show him something. Of the Twilight the Darkness was also nudging him to follow.
As Moist gingerly threaded his way through the network of almost invisible paths in the wasteland of thorns, pools of poisonous water, and occasional blockages caused by old rockfalls, he noticed a crackling underfoot. Bones, he realized, mostly small bones. And in his ear were the words of the twilight, the darkness.
Young goblins, very tasty. A lot of good eating. Bandits thought so. But we hang, Mr. Litvig. We hang on.
The horror tripped its way icily over Moist's backbone. Of the twilight, the darkness continued.
Those bandits was hungry. Small goblins, easy to catch.
Are you saying they were eating the goblins? The vehemence of Moist's cry was picked up by Of the Twilight the Darkness immediately.
Sure, easy meat. The bandit men eat anything they can catch. Rats, moles, shrews, birds, even stinky bird like raven. Eat it up, yum yum. Shit out nasty poisonous stuff. Goblin meat like chicken. Miracle of nature, maybe not, but no use to goblin when bandits around. They don't want much, mister, and good job because they don't get. But like me will do any job in free air. Place to live not being killed, yes, hunky-dory. And no need food in Ankh-Morpork. Big wahoony, rats everywhere.
Okay, Mr. Twilight, where do we go from here? The goblin gave Moist a cynical look, something which is very easy to do when you're a goblin, because you learn cynicism early and you learn it fast.
You give me half name, Mr. Damp. I forgive, have mercy. This time, I ask you, don't do it again. Is very important. Half name is shame. Challenge to fight. No, you hasty. No understanding. We'll forgive you. We'll forgive once, Mr. Litvig. This by way of friendly information. No charge incurred.
Whatever Moist von Litvig was, he knew the use of the right word at the right time. Mr. of the Twilight the Darkness, thank you for your forbearance. It was beginning to rain, sticky, lazy rain, but the goblins seemed to be oblivious to it. These people are the world's most stoical of stoics, Moist thought, albeit with a sting in their tail. I wonder what they are like when they decide, and they will decide, not to take everything on their greasy chins. Of the Twilight, the Darkness grinned at Moist again and declared,
"Hey, you, Mr. Hero, mighty warrior, except, ha, these dumb boogers really think you is bees bollocks. Think sun percolate out your ass."
Moist realized that Of the Twilight, the Darkness's presentation to the goblins of the delights of Ankh-Morpork and his status in the city might have been somewhat exaggerated. "What did you say to make them think that?"
"These goblins need hope, Mr. Litvig. You ain't genuine good guy, but you can pretend like no bee's nest. I have already explained to them that you are great citizen of Ankh-Morpork and dreadful fighter."
"Well," said Moist, "at least you got one bit right." "But the bandits have surely been scared off now. The goblins can stay here, can't they? There'll be jobs on the railway when it comes through here. They'd like that, wouldn't they?"
"Bandit men come back in time. Always is bandits. These goblins can't fly, Mr. Soggy. Long way back to Ankh-Morpork line. Looks for you to get them out of here. Me? I ain't just fallen off Hogswatch tree. You don't carry knife, and now it night time, and you are still in Mackie. Worse here than just bandits. Bad worse. Everything bad end up in the Mackie, and you still with no weapon. What are your orders, Mr. Big Man?"
Moist hesitated. He had a feel for this sort of thing, he was sure, and it hardly ever let him down. "Okay, we'll take them with us, but first you must get us out of here."
"No, Marvellous von Litvig is going to take the people out. Plucky goblin sidekick, just bring up the rear."
"Really? Okay, then. Just point me in the right direction." There was a track of sorts, and myriad little pathways in every direction. Moist and his unhappy but hopeful band were shepherded surreptitiously from behind by Of the Twilight the Darkness, who was becoming a great lieutenant, despite the fact that he brazenly considered Moist to be a bit of a tit, but a useful tit all the same. As they struggled back to what, in a fair wind, might have been called a proper track, Moist told himself that whilst it was true that Commander Vimes was the man who had been most prominent in the manumission of the goblins, he, Moist, could at least give them a job. You couldn't have a profession as a goblin, now could you? Just made no sense. And yet, if there were such a thing as a professional goblin, then it was definitely of the Twilight the Darkness, who was so goblin that you could imagine that other goblins would tap one another on the shoulder and say, "Blimey, look at that goblin. Doesn't he look like a goblin to you?" But jobs got things going, got people going, and raised their self-esteem. After all, goblins, quite apart from now being ubiquitous in the clax industry, were also doing very well, and picking up serious folding money in the ceramics business. Goblin pots were beautiful, extremely fine, and as iridescent as a butterfly's wing. Ungupots, as they were called, had a major and sacred part in goblin society. In Ankh-Morpork, sensible goblins were making quasi-ungupots for sale, looking like the real thing, Adora Bell said, but with the magic taken out and the wonderful sparkle left in. However, it helped if you didn't pay too much attention to what the pots traditionally held. Moist's reverie was broken by Of the Twilight the Darkness. "These poor Herberts behind us think you need to know that dwarf's been asking after you, like sneaky one up tree I saw off. My, can't the greedy buggers shift when need? Don't like good flint edge, but still are some around. Reckon they waiting until we get to railway. Right place for ambush." Moist had devoted considerable energies to being a non-combatant, words being his weapon of choice. But when words weren't enough, in extremis, he could deliver telling blows with his fists and feet. Right now he was wondering whether to surreptitiously drag said feet a little so that he would be surrounded by the band of goblins if there was an attack. After all, they all had stone weapons, didn't they? And he didn't, did he? Goblins acquired a fighting spirit with their mother's milk, if indeed their mothers had milk. There was no point in speculating on what else they could have, just the thought turned Moist's stomach. They continued cautiously into the ever-deepening dusk, now moving as silently as they could manage. Even the goblin toddlers were quiet as they walked towards the promised land. They skirted the grounds of the chateau and moved on through the woods in the direction of the railhead. A while later, there came a crushed gravel whisper at Moist's elbow from Of the Twilight the Darkness.
"I'm sending out some swifter lads to scout ahead. Something not right at railhead. Couldn't get close enough to see, but says at least dozen dwarfs in woods up there, maybe more. Could hear the buggers clanging. They try to be surreptitious, but dwarfs has not first idea of surreptition. It's all been hammer and tongues to dwarfs. Could try to go round them, but the buggers might try go round us same time. Best, I say, to deal with bogies today, right? No worry. Some of these lobster lads know how to fight, and they proud you leading them, ain't you?"
It wasn't a question, it was a demand. Moist was horribly aware of the whole refugee group clustered around him, their unprepossessing faces full of expectation and miscellaneous fragments of food. There were little ones, some no more than babes in arms. Moist could feel the pressure of their hope, which, alas, he knew was unfounded and probably misplaced. He was no leader, not like Commander Vimes. But what would Of the Twilight the Darkness do if he just ran away? He could outrun any dwarf, make it back to the chateau. But could he outrun a goblin? He shivered and shoved that thought to the very back of his mind, just as a small goblin woman came up to him.
"Go into battle with nice cup of tea," she said. "Special goblin tea, very good for you. Boiled in sheep bladder. Excellent when always having to run. Got herbs. You drink. You drink now. Ain't nothing like a nice cup of tea. Medicinal it is."
Of the Twilight the Darkness handed Moist a large goblin club.
"Many, many ways to die today," he said, with devastating humour. "Trust elderly goblin. This one very much the best. Hang, we hang together."
Moist understood that last rather unfortunate suggestion. It was the traditional goblin-to-goblin greeting, as in hang together or hang separately. He swigged the cold tea, which had a harmless accent of hazelnuts and a soupçon of wool, expecting at any moment either to be poisoned or to throw up. In fact, it was pleasant, and it also felt quite nourishing. If there were snails in it, like the wine, then, well, viva escargot. Although the secret ingredient, he was quite sure, was quite likely to be avec. The potion appeared to work because a few moments later he felt ready for anything, full of beans or possibly full of avec. Why, in the face of all the gods, had he been so apprehensive when there was absolutely nothing to be frightened of? Oh dear no! This cheerful state of mind continued right up until the moment they spotted the red lights of the railhead shining out like a beacon through the surrounding woodlands. Leaving the most elderly goblins with the twigs, any young goblin is thought of as being a twig, hiding in the undergrowth, as only goblins could hide, Moist and the rest crept forward.